This is Days That Made Us, a project that challenges people to choose the one day of their life that made them who they are and describe it.
This is a better one, but you've got to have it goes round and plays very good music, all old-fashioned. Oh, this thing, yeah. Well, it's the fairground carousel, and my wife loved them. And if we saw a carousel anywhere, even the children's one, we wanted a ticket to go on. And she loved it, so I got those. It's Alexander Mackenzie Walker. The day we got back in one piece, with no problems, on the Arctic convoy. It was bad going, and it was bad coming back, but the good day was when he stepped off the ship and back again. It was an agreement between, I think, Churchill and Stalin. They wanted the Allies to open a second front, and so they organised these convoys to supply food and ammunition. It was bad for a lot of ships. You expected to be attacked, going and coming, and it was aircraft as well as U-boats. I was in bed, mostly naked, because the ship was like an oven. You wake up, it was such, and you wonder what's going on. Well, we had the portholes open, which you're not supposed to because it was blackout. And all I could see through the porthole was like bits of fire coming down, smoke and things. And then you rush, it's instinct, you know you're sinking. And you rush round, get your wallet, and I got my clothes on the coat hanger and rushed out on deck, and I held him in my teeth, the coat hanger. And they were trying to lower the boat, and they lowered the boat. One man grabbed the rope, one of the sailors, and it took all the skin off his hands. I just touched it and I let go. I let two go first. I watched how they went down, because it was semi-darkness, this. It wasn't quite daylight, and it was all a mess on the deck. Everything was all over the place, and the smoke and things. And I thought, well, if I hear a splash, I know there's no lifeboat down there. But if I hear a thud, I'll go. So two went down, and they were just in. I didn't hear any splashes. I went down myself, and I was third in. I was pretty fast those days. And were cast off, and there were still blocks coming down. There was still another lifeboat. And with that, somebody said, what's that? And it was the sub, it come on the top. And only about 100 yards away, and pointing at the ship. And he let fire with his deck gun. And he blew the bridge apart in the wireless room. And we met up with the other, and it was only firing when we watched it, and we crouched down, because it was firing machine guns as well, and they were bouncing off all over the place, and searchlights. We didn't know whether it was firing at us in the boats. Are they going to shoot us? Are they going to open fire on us? And when they didn't, that was good. We were watching for a bit, and somebody, where's the sun? And he'd gone. And the mist was still there, and he just disappeared. When they'd blown the bridge and everything to pieces, that the submarine's finished his work, and he could see it was in a bad way, the ship. So he wouldn't waste any more ammunition. And it took an hour and a half to go down from the explosion. They timed it. And it slowly, very slowly, started to go down by the stern, but it heeled over to starboard on its side. And then gradually its bow stuck up and it seemed an age till it went. And we watched that ship go down to the last little ripple. And then somebody said, she's gone. And it's like losing your home. And I think it's then that you realise the situation you're in, when the ship's gone and you're in a lifeboat. What do we do? Oh, pass the water around and the food. So you got a little, about an ounce of water and a biscuit. And that had to last you while night time. Sorting the oars out, who's going to row this and who's going to do that. And you realise you're still alive. I'm wondering where my trousers were in the lifeboat. And nothing on. And one bloke had my jacket on. Anyway, I retrieved them. He gave me my jacket back. There was one man came to me in the lifeboat not long after the sub had left. And he was terrified. A young bloke. I would imagine he'd be in his 20s, stoker down below. And he says, will you help me? He said, I've got no life jacket. And he said, I can't swim. I says, yeah, I'll help you. But I don't suppose I would have done. If you're all in the water together, there's not much you can do hundreds of miles from land. It's just one of those things that some people are scared and some not. But you allow for that. But I say I was young and quite happy and things. But I would imagine the older blokes who had families to be thinking about them. It was good to get going, and looking behind you could see a little wake, so we knew we were moving about. And that was good. And then you start talking about home or what ships you've been on and anything. And then they go quiet. And the second day it's quiet. You see, when they woke up that second day, they were shivering cold. But as the day wears on, they're like animals, they wake up a bit. And then the third day you see an aeroplane coming, and that's a good day. A really good day. Somebody shouted, there's a plane! Where? Where? And there it come, you could hear the drone of it. He must have had wonderful eyesight to see when I'd have been plane spotting all night long. And it was a Catalina aircraft. It's like a flying boat. And at the side, there's two big blisters. And in there, there's some, I think the Browning machine guns. Fired his guns to let us know it's seen us. And waggled. And fired his guns again. And then he went. And I thought, that was good. Oh, and he dropped a parachute with a dustbin thing type thing on the end, and we had to get to it and haul it on board our boat. And inside were blankets, there were some containers of water, cigarettes, and I believe there was some chocolate in there. And we're happy then. We got supplies and blankets. And later on that day, we're going along, somebody said there's a ship. Same thing again, you all rush to one side. Where? Over there. And right on the horizon, you could just see the smoke, a little bit coming. And it was this American destroyer picking us up. You climb up the nets to get on board. And straight away in the showers, and soap and clothing. And we all then end up wearing American Navy uniforms with the little hats on. That was brilliant. It was really good. Oh, medals, yeah. There's the Arctic Star, which was only the English people giving it, after a lot of people fought to get recognition for the merchant seamen. And I applied in 1946, and I got them a couple of months ago through the post from 46, because I gather they'd been busy. The Russians also had one for the end of the war, the 70th anniversary. It was a Zhukov medal, very highly prized. It's for the Arctic convoys, and the establishments wouldn't let them have it, whoever they are. And it's always down south that you can't have this medal, because the Cold War was on, and you can't have Russian medals. In the end, they relented, and we had to go to London to the Russian embassy, and the Russian ambassador, a nice guy, awarded us with a medal. Well, after seeing what happened in Russia, the Russian people, what they put up with, and the Russian army, all the fort, and the people they lost, they found time to give us a medal in thanks for supplying them with ammo and food and going there, and the ships that were sank and men that were lost. I'm proud to wear it. They said you can't wear it alongside the English medals, but we will. I know I will. It's there. If the ones here are there, that one's there. I don't care what anybody says. It wouldn't worry me. It's a reminder. I wear it in remembrance of the blokes who didn't come back. The one convoy alone, PQ-17. 34 ships and 11 got through. Trying to fight that lot off. Impossible. I'm proud to have it. I would put the Russian medal on. Stopped. For that.